Blog Talk Radio.
And hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Going Old School Show, live on blogtalkradio.com, Wednesday, July 19th of the year 2023. John Crow, Joe Foran, Johnny Hinn here for you for the next, about an hour and a half or so. We get a lot of baseball to talk about as the trade deadline looms. Races, a lot could go on here. We'll talk about the Boston Red Sox and their disheartening loss at Oakland when they lose the series. But NFL training camps are in full, well, not in full swing yet, but they are underway in some parts of the country. And we love to talk football with this man. We did it all last year. He covers the Arizona Cardinals for PHNX. He's a Hall of Fame selector. He is a co-host of a weekly Hall of Fame radio show on Sirius XM NFL Radio. And he is an associate editor for Lindy's Pro Football Preview magazine. We welcome him once again, Howard Balzer from the West Coast. Howard, John, and Joe here for you. Thanks for the time. How's everything going, sir?
Everything's going well. You mentioned from the West Coast, more specifically Phoenix, where today we are experiencing our 20th consecutive day of temperatures of 110 or more. So, but it is a dry heat, and today's high, they're saying today is, I've seen it different places. So supposedly today, I haven't been outside much, for understandably, but apparently the temperature is about 119 today, and that's the high so far in this 20-day streak. It's been 118 a couple of times. And the crazy thing about it, guys, is not only the record for consecutive high temperatures, but there's also been a record for the consecutive highest low temperatures, which for like 11 straight days has the low of the day has been 90 or higher. So it's been pretty crazy. But let's remember, there's no such thing as climate change.
Yeah, I know, you're right. Nothing, right? Nothing. I of course not. Oh my goodness.
I do want to ask you guys though, real quick, because I know we want to talk football here, but it just struck me when you were talking about, hey, we got baseball to talk about, of course, and you mentioned old school. Did you guys in the last couple of weeks happen to at least to mention and talk about the classic game from 60 years ago that happened on July 2nd? Between the Giants, the San Francisco Giants, and the Milwaukee Braves?
It was a pitching duel, and I know I saw it. I know you tweeted it out, but do tell.
Yeah, it was on July 2nd, 1963. Warren Spahn, at the age of 42 years old, pitching for the Braves. Juan Marichal for the Giants. The game went 16 innings, was won in the bottom of the 16th, 1-0 on a Willie Mays home run, and each pitcher pitched the entire game.
Mm-hmm.
And Spahn had something like 227 pitches in the game, and Juan Marichal 201. So we all talk about how much football has changed over the years, but how about baseball? You know, two pitchers, really? I mean, you don't even have two pitchers in a game going nine innings anymore, yeah, much less 16. And of course, and the other part of it was the game only lasted 16 innings, four hours and 1 minute. So I just thought that was pretty phenomenal. So just wanted to throw it in there.
You know what's funny too about that, Howard? Think about where we've come far as far as nutrition, you know, where the body, science, modern science. It's miles away, worlds away from where it was back then. Yet these guys went out. They're probably smoking cigarettes in the dugout, maybe having a beer or two. Who the heck knows? And they're doing these incredible things, which by today's standards wouldn't even think of on a baseball mound.
Yeah, no, exactly right. And all the things you were mentioning, and the travel, of course, is so much better these days than it was then. I don't think there's any such thing as charter airplanes, and you know, and all that stuff. So yeah, it's pretty incredible when you look back on that and see what, you know, how the game was played. And hard to believe that was 60 years ago. I was 12 years old at the time, and I don't remember the game. Maybe I remember hearing about it. I'm not sure, but to see it now in this day in the context of the way the game is played was pretty interesting.
Howard Balzer joins us. You can read him on Twitter at HBALZER721. Howard, lots to talk about there. I appreciate you. We appreciate your time again, but I want to talk to you about the running back room in the NFL and the apparent insurrection that's going on with the tweets following the Saquon Barkley stuff. I think we've hit the tip of the iceberg with this story. But what are your thoughts on what's going on in the running back room in the NFL?
I totally understand the frustration that a lot of these running backs have, but certainly within their emotional frustration, there has to be some reality. And I think, you know, the reality of it is that, and we were talking about for years that the running back position has been devalued and it's not as important anymore. I've never agreed with that. I still think that running backs are very important. They're very important to offenses, and certainly while it is a passing league and a passing game and quarterbacks are king, and they've always been king, but the reality is that there's diminishing returns with running backs once they've played a lot. And yes, someone can point to all the years that Emmitt Smith played and all, you know, the years other guys have played. Derrick Henry has done a pretty good job of lasting, but for the most part, those are outliers. And so when guys get to that second contract, and I know a lot has been put out there with different suggestions like, well, you know, make it so running backs become free agents earlier. Well, how much earlier are you going to want to make them a free agent? After 2 years? I mean, then, you know, why would a team draft anybody? You know, then what you're going to have is you're certainly not going to have any running backs, you know, drafted in the first round because no team is going to want to lose them, you know, after 2 years. But the reality is that whenever it is, three, four, you know, I mean, it's not going to change things that much because teams are still going to be reluctant to give out 4- and 5-year contracts with a lot of guaranteed money in it that has the big opportunity to turn around and bite them. Now, I know some would argue, well, a lot of contracts might turn around and bite teams. And certainly that's true. But the odds are higher that that will happen with running backs. I mean, we saw it with Todd Gurley, who got a big contract with the Rams and didn't last much longer after that contract. It was Ezekiel Elliott, got the big contract with the Cowboys. And while he still played some years, he certainly wasn't the same running back the last couple of years. And then they ended up releasing him this offseason, and he can't find another job. And so I think, like I said, I think it's just the reality of it, and they can scream and yell all they want, but I don't know that anything would be a real, you know, solution to it. You know, I know it was one suggestion on Pro Football Talk, well, create a fund that will, you know, pay players that, you know, get a lot of yards, you know, rushing yards and touchdowns. Well, that sounds good, but the reality is that when a player is still playing well, he's getting his money, but once they get to that end of that first contract, then, you know, you're talking about a guy getting towards his 27, 28, getting closer and closer to 30 years old, and what are you going to get from that guy? I mean, here's Saquon Barkley talking like, you know, I understand his frustration, and that, well, I'll show him how important I am. I won't report, and I won't play. Well, what's that going to gain? It doesn't mean that next year, if you don't play this year, well, the Giants still have your rights, and what's going to happen then? You've just lost even if it's only $10 million, you just lost that $10 million that you're not going to get back, and you'll be a year older. And, you know, he's had injuries, you know, his first years in the league. You know, we saw Christian McCaffrey, who's in the midst of a big contract, and look at the 2 years of injuries he had, you know, with the Carolina Panthers. And so I think it's unfortunate that's the way it is, but, hey, that's the way it is, and I don't know that there's anything that can truly, you know, truly change it. I don't think it's a lack of respect. It's just business, and that's the way the teams look at this, and it's not just the teams right now this year that have Barkley and Josh Jacobs with the Raiders and Tony Pollard, you know, with the Cowboys. It's not just those teams. It's any other teams that would be willing to pay them. I mean, look at Dalvin Cook. I mean, the Vikings released him, and so they wouldn't have to pay $10.4 million this year, a guy that's had injuries, you know, over the last few seasons. And what's he finding in the open market? Well, so far he hasn't been signed. And I would argue that he's probably not, you know, going to end up getting, you know, what he thinks he deserves. And as unfair as that might seem and people's yelling and screaming about it, like I said, I think it's just an unfortunate reality.
And Howard, talk about that business reportedly through the Packers. $374 million per team in national revenue distributed across the league for this upcoming year. And, of course, you have Austin Eckler from the Chargers making his plea to the owners for more equitable system for players. But a couple of those guys, running backs, in Foxborough today working out were Darnell Henderson and Leonard Fournette. Do you think either one of those guys is a fit for the Patriots?
Is either one of those guys what?
A fit for the Patriots.
Oh, a fit for the Patriots. Yeah, you know, Darrell Henderson Jr., I mean, he's had some injuries the last couple of years. He's a solid back. He could potentially, you know, with the way that the Patriots use running backs, you know, I could see that being, you know, a guy that would help them. It's certainly not going to be a big contract. I think Fournette, I've heard some people say, well, he didn't really mean all that much to the Buccaneers. I argue vociferously the other way, because the Buccaneers were an average team coming down the stretch of 2020. In fact, they were 7-5 with four games to go in the regular season. And at some point in there, it might have been right when they were 7-5, they signed Fournette, who had been released, and he was a big factor in the Bucs, you know, with Tom Brady, a quarterback, you know, winning the Super Bowl that year because of the way he played, not only running, but catching the ball. And now the Bucs released him. So I think, you know, depending on how good shape he is, I think that, you know, he's not going to be a guy, I don't think, that's going to, you know, have 20, 25 touches a game. But in a shared type of situation, I think he could probably, you know, somewhat help that offense. I don't know how hard a worker he is. There's been some things said about him like that in the past. So I don't know how much, you know, if that would fit, you know, Bill Belichick's way of what he expects from players. But I think from ability, they're probably two guys that could help that running back room. But I don't know that at this point in their careers either, certainly not Henderson, are going to be true difference makers. But they could be good guys in a, you know, in a room that has Stevenson and some other guys that could help them potentially.
Oh, not to talk about running backs, we'll go with wide receivers. DeAndre Hopkins, Arizona Cardinal. What's your feeling and what's your take on him signing with Tennessee over New England? Do you think it's a better fit with Tennessee and Tannehill?
I don't know, quite honestly, if either team would be a great fit for him, and only from the standpoint of I wonder why. I guess those were the only two teams that were truly in the hunt, and we don't even know how much the Patriots were really in the hunt, because obviously we don't have any absolute information on if there were contract talks with the Patriots, what those looked like. But you know, I just mentioned, you know, Fournette and his, you know, practice habits. You know, Hopkins, I mean, he was here 3 years in Arizona that I was here, and he was a guy that didn't practice a whole lot on Wednesdays. Mm-hmm. And he would, when he would be asked about it, he would always say, well, I know my body, and the most important thing is being ready on Sunday. I always wondered if that really fit again with the way Bill Belichick runs that team. And so, but I think, you know, the thing with Hopkins, I was a little surprised at the financial package that he got from the Titans. But the weird thing from his standpoint is what we all believe throughout this long process is that, you know, for A, he's very cognizant of wanting to be in the Hall of Fame. And he knows that in his final, however many seasons it is, that he's got to continue putting up numbers. He's got pretty good numbers already. He's already over 11,000 yards. But it was also believed that the best way to do that, you know, to accomplish those numbers would be with a really good team. And he talked in the offseason about the type of quarterback that he wanted to play with. And I don't know if either Mac Jones or Ryan Tannehill are those guys. And interesting in Tennessee is they have a Belichick disciple in their head coach in Mike Vrabel. And so it looks like a money grab on Hopkins' part, that no matter what he said about quarterbacks, whatever he talked about winning, is that he wanted to go somewhere where he would pay what he believed he was worth. And so that $12 million, well, in the two-year deal, we don't know yet. The contract hasn't been reported yet. to the NFL, even though there was the story that he agreed to terms over the weekend. The signing hasn't been reported to the NFL yet, so we don't know the true terms of it. I mean, we know the base number. We know the money that he has to earn or the incentives that he has to reach to get to some incentives. But the one thing we don't know is how much of that $26 million base is guaranteed. What is the structure of the second year? And is there a signing bonus in there? We presume that there is. And then perhaps there's some void years that would help the Titans against the cap. So there's some things we don't know yet in terms of this contract. But it is instructive that if the $12 million is what he's earning this year before, without incentives, that's $3 million less than Odell Beckham Jr. got from the Ravens. And he hasn't even played since the Super Bowl at the end of the 2021 season. So that just shows that there were teams that, for a variety of reasons, looked at Hopkins. No, he's had some injuries the last 2 years. He just turned 31, and he's not a speed guy. He is a hell of a receiver, incredible catch radius, amazing hands, and just knows how to get open. But he's not a true downfield threat. That doesn't mean he can't help a team, because he obviously can. But you just wonder how much is he really going to be able to, help the Titans, and especially if something happens to Ryan Tannehill. I mean, he missed 5 games last year, and now he's expected to be their quarterback. But after that, they don't, they have Will Levis, the rookie, and then Malik Willis, I believe, right? Who was drafted last year. And so it was just an odd situation. To a degree. And those incentives, by the way, that were put out there, to reach $3 million in a year, he has to reach the receptions, yards, and touchdowns, which are a million each. And so he has to reach them all to get that $3 million. He's done that 3 times in his career to reach those numbers. But the last time was in 2018. 2021, he only reached one of them, and that was the touchdowns, and would have had $750,000 under these terms. And last year, he missed 8 games, and so he wasn't going to reach any of them. So we'll see how that plays out. But I went back and looked at the Titans under Tannehill, and the most that any receiver got was in 2020 with A.J. Brown, and he reached $2.25 million. Again, those aren't his incentives. Those are based on the incentives in Hopkins' contract. So, like I said, I think it was an odd signing, but there just wasn't that much interest in him. And while we heard about the Chiefs and the Bills, mm-hmm. having interest, which I'm sure was real, is that they don't have a lot of salary cap space. So they would have had to have been very creative with a contract that might have included even more in incentives than he got in this deal. And that might have been something that DeAndre Hopkins, as much as he would like to play for one of those winners, wasn't interested in. So, we'll see how it all works out. But I do have, my doubts, about that there. And, let's remember, too, he was scheduled to make $19.5 million in his contract with the Cardinals. And so, however this contract's structured, it looks like he's going to be paid a whole lot less than that this season.
He covers the Arizona Cardinals and the NHL for NFL for Phoenix.com. Howard Ball has joined us on the Going Old School Show. Howard, I want to talk about the Patriots. I want to get your opinion on the perception. Here in New England, but the talk following the fallout with DeAndre Hopkins and them not signing him is that they tend to put a dollar value on position, and they will not budge. That's the way it is. If they draw a line in the sand, they don't cross it. They're being correct with that a little bit, meaning a lot of the perception here and a lot of the fallout and a lot of venom this week is about the fact that they just think that they have, back in the, 7-8 years ago, it was a destination with TB12 at quarterback. They had the greatest guy in the history. And they seem to have that sort of attitude now still, when they don't have the cachet they did. You're in Arizona. You're in the circle. From afar, is that something that people talk about and see outside here in New England, where everyone seems to be jaded at an idea.
Yeah, I think that probably the perception has changed. And I think that there were players that were, you know, willing to go there because it was the Patriots and they had Tom Brady and they knew they had a very good chance of winning a championship. I don't know that you – I think it's pretty clear that you can't say that now. You know they'll be competitive. I think that – you know, I think that after Brady's departure – with another coach, they might not have even had as good a record as they did, and it wouldn't have even made the playoffs. But even in the years they didn't, they were still able to not have one of those horrible seasons that teams will have with three or four wins. So, but I don't think there's any doubt that things have changed, and there are questions about maybe it can change this year if Mac Jones continues what he looked to have been starting in his rookie year. Beginning and then kind of fell off last year, and we know all those reasons have been discussed. But I think it's also players talk, and they know I think they think to a degree that I'll go somewhere else. I don't need to that might not be my number one choice, knowing what you face with Bill Belichick and just the way he does things. It's not to say that's the wrong things or anything like that, but. Some players will just go somewhere else, and so I think that's what makes these next couple of seasons really important for them to make it a destination again. And then everyone has to wonder how long is Bill Belichick going to continue doing this? Is Robert Kraft really going to grow weary of them not being what they once were? And so that's what makes them. Maybe one of the more intriguing teams in the league from that particular storyline, because for two decades it was just incredible. It was and all you had was the debates: who was more responsible for the success, Belichick or Brady? Brady or Belichick? And went back and forth. Well, here we are post Brady, and so far at least it hasn't been even close to what they achieved with Brady. Even the years when they didn't win a Super Bowl. And granted, one thing is that division wasn't very good for a lot of years during that stretch. Now the division overall is a whole lot better, and that makes it even tougher. So that's why I say I think it's one of the more intriguing storylines in the league as we enter this season and going forward after it.
And Howard, sticking with that intrigue in Foxborough, there are folks that believe that Kraft would let things go to hell in a handbasket before he would let Bill Belichick walk out the door because of the record of him beating Don Shula for most wins all time. Do you believe that? Or do you believe that he would actually make a move and let him walk before breaking Don Shula's all-time record?
I can understand that thinking to a point. I mean, I haven't looked at how many wins behind Shula is he right now?
19.
It's like 18. Yeah, it's like 18.
I guess we're talking if he wouldn't reach that in the next two seasons, which would mean that they're just still middling around a 500 record. So if assuming, and that's maybe a big assumption, that if Belichick is back in 2024. If you go through another 2 years of just average play, which essentially is what they've been the last 3 years, you then bring back at that point, you bring back a coach just so we can get 3 wins or 4 just to set an all-time record. I don't know that Robert Kraft would do that. Maybe he would, but I would think that many people think that one more average year could get Kraft to move on. But I also think that he probably realizes that even if you change the coach, that coach will still come in with the same, with the same players. And so you would have to hire more than just a coach. You'd also have to hire someone that would run the football end of the operation. And that'll you talk about intrigue. Whenever it is that Belichick steps away, that'll be the really fascinating thing that Kraft does next, because let's remember, guys, everyone thought he was nuts not only for hiring Belichick as the head coach, but giving him control of the organization and control over the personnel. I mean, he hadn't done much to warrant that at the time, but he just had that sense it was the right move, and it turned out that it was. So what will he do next? Will he get a guy like that again, or will it be a total revamping of, you know, getting a general manager and a head coach? So it's going to happen at some point in the coming years, and, you know, we'll see. Who knows? How much is Robert Kraft still, you know, making all the decisions at that point? He's not a young guy, you know, anymore. Will it be his son, Jonathan, who's making that call? So, yeah, there's a lot of questions about the future, you know, direction of this franchise, because, as you know, like I said, it's going to end at some point with Belichick. We just don't know when.
I just think you hit the nail on the head right there with Jonathan Kraft taking over sooner than later because of age. But just think about it, Howard, the Chuck Knowles of the world, the Tom Landrys of the world, the Don Shulas of the world, all excellent, great coaches, but their reigns come to an end at some point. And can the Patriots seamlessly or at least switch over from Belichick to another coach? And is there another coach in the system? That's a good question. But let's change subjects here. How is Arizona this year? What's the feeling of Arizona going into the year, coming out of OTAs, coming out of mini camps? What's the feeling on Arizona going into the season?
You know, most everybody here in the area is they realize that this is probably not going to be a very good football team. I think that they have the hope that they will be at least competitive. They'll lose close games, but as we all know, where the fine line exists in the NFL, and the biggest question, of course, is no one knows when Kyler Murray is going to be able to play. And then even when he does, everyone's wondering, well, what's that offensive line going to look like? What is the receiving core going to look like? I mean, heck, they've I was doing a little TV bit with a guy in town about a month ago, right when it was around minicamp time, and I mentioned, and he's right around my height. We were both about 5'9" and a half, and I said, hey, you know, the three receivers the Cardinals have coming back, Hollywood Brown, Rondale Moore, and Greg Dortch, all three of them are shorter than us. I mean, Brown is the tallest one of the group at 5'9", and the other two guys are 5'7". And so even with Murray coming back, you wonder how good will he be. I mean, a lot of his great – when he played really well and was healthy, a lot of that was with DeAndre Hopkins around. And now he's not going to be there. So, and then the defense has changed tremendously. No one knows where the pass rush is going to come from. The cornerback position has a lot of question marks. But I think everyone looks at it and sees the players that have been shed, the players signed in free agency in the offseason, it was the guys they re-signed, and the players they added from other teams. I think there was around 22 of them, and nobody signed more than a two-year contract. Here's an amazing number. The total guaranteed money for the 22 players they signed was $27 million. That's it. And so they've signed a lot of guys who are going to be playing for their next contracts next year. And so I think they're hoping with the new energy that the head coach, Jonathan Gannon, is bringing, is that you'll have a lot of guys that are playing for contracts, playing hard, and that – hopefully they will improve as the season wears on. But they've also stockpiled a bunch of extra draft picks for next year to go with, you know, whatever picks they earn themselves with whatever their record is. And so I think people realize it's not going to look very pretty, but they believe at least that by the change that, you know, they're doing things the right way. But who knows? I mean, everyone seems – they love Monty Austin for it, and the deals he made, but you still don't know how good the players were he drafted. You don't know until they get on the field and start playing. And so I think there is some optimism for the future, but for this season, it doesn't look very pretty. Now, maybe the thought would be different if Murray was going to be available in week one. And you figure, well, he can manufacture some things. But I've always insisted and always talk about how important it is for the quarterback to have the supporting cast around him. And there's still a lot of question marks about that on this team entering this season.
He's an associate editor for Lindy's Pro Football Preview magazine. Howard, I have the fantasy issue in front of me right now. Besides the fact that all the running backs, five out of the top 10 running backs, that bodes well for the running backs, at least in fantasy. But my favorite part of this magazine is you break down each team's offensive line, and that's something I haven't seen in a while. Makes total sense. We talk about the line play on all the shows that we do during the season. But talk about the magazine, and I just love that feature where if you're going to draft some of these guys, you got to know who's blocking in front of them. But I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it's always interesting about that, I find. I think I've mentioned this on the show before about the term I have for a lot of things, not only in the NFL but in all sports. I call it collective amnesia because everyone will talk about the team's offensive line in the preseason. Oh, and they helped it with this guy, they hope, and they did this and they did that. And then when things don't go well during the regular season, especially on offense, everyone just wants to, you know, criticize the play caller, criticize the quarterback, but they ignore what's going on the offensive line. And many times that's why a team isn't consistent in games because of issues on the offensive line. And I've done that story for that fantasy magazine now for a number of years. And the one thing you can see from it is besides picking – you know, the projected starters and the projected backups, I put in the games that the players played and started the year before and whether they came from and whether those games were with a different team. And it's interesting as I put it together, you see some teams that have everybody back, and there's not that many that do, but there's some that have everybody back that played a lot of games. Then you have a couple, some teams that have, you know, a lot, you know, two, three guys on there that hardly played last year, and I'm not even talking about just rookies. It's all about the unit, and that's the thing about the offensive line I think is kind of forgotten sometimes, is that it's about the unit and those five guys, the chemistry, playing together, and being on the field together. And it doesn't mean you can't overcome, you know, one guy missing some games or some changes. But when you start, and you know, I talked about this with the Cardinals all last year, and especially the Rams, with the number of different guys that started on the offensive line, you just can't be successful. And you hope that going in, the guys that start week one continue to be your starters. And usually it doesn't happen that way, but the ones that have the littlest or the fewest changes are the ones that at least have a fighting chance of having a consistent offense. And it's true on the other side of the ball too, on the defensive line. You know, we hear it all the time. Well, football's won in the trenches. Football's won in the trenches. How many times we hear that? And then when a team loses, all they talk about is, well, the quarterback. So it's, there's that collective amnesia there. And with the Cardinals, I mean, and you know, and I point this out with the Patriots many times. I mean, Dante Scarnecchia received this award this year from the Hall of Fame, an award of excellence. And I was glad to see the Hall of Fame did that. They started them last year, and they recognized some assistant coaches because it's virtually impossible to get an assistant coach in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. But, you know, what we forget with the Patriots a little bit was the kind of – and I can't call it mediocre because they were still winning the division and still getting in the playoffs. But there was a stretch of time after their first three Super Bowls where it took a while to win their next one. And part of that, near in that stretch, was when Dante Scarnecchia retired. And then, I think I'm right on this, the year he decided he came back, I think he missed two seasons, the year he came back, they went to the Super Bowl again. Mm-hmm. And the line was a lot better than it had been. And so it's just, like you said, guys, it's just so important. It's forgotten or overlooked a lot of times in the rush to find one person or somebody to blame, but that's where every game begins, and you better have that group for the most part that stays together. And you know, the Eagles and the Chiefs, I'm fairly certain we talked about this last year, the Eagles and the Chiefs were classic examples. I mean, on their entire offensive lines, last season, each team, each of those teams, only had three missed starts on their entire line in 20 games, not just in 17, but in the 20 games they played, including the playoffs. And when you have that, that certainly, you know, creates the better opportunities for Patrick Mahomes and Jalen Hurts and the supporting cast that they have at the skill positions.
Howard, I got to ask you, not a specific player, but going into this season, every once in a while we'll see a specific trend that will change its way heading into a particular season. Do you see something that fantasy players should look out for heading into the 2023 season?
That's a really good question. I don't know if there's any – I don't know if I can identify a trend that is maybe different than what it's been, but, you know, I do see I do think, and I don't think it's any revelation, especially going back to the discussion about running backs, that it's awfully hard to really feel comfortable in some cases who you're drafting at running back, because a lot of times it's important to look at the depth of a team and maybe identifying that guy who maybe right now looks to be, he's not going to play all that much. He's this, second or third guy, but might be someone who ends up, really doing well. But it's tough to feel real confident in that. But a lot of times that's what will happen. Like a guy like Pacheco with the Chiefs, who hardly anybody knew about last season at this time, a seventh round draft pick. And I remember, guys, when the Chiefs came to Arizona to play the Cardinals in week one, and he came in, the Chiefs blew him out, and so it wasn't a game in the second half, and they brought in Pacheco to play, and I'm watching this guy, and I'm going, oh, my goodness, this guy can play. He's quick. He's strong. And sure enough, he ended up having a pretty nice impact on that team throughout the season and in the postseason. So, those are the guys. That might be, that's a little bit of a trend, but we've seen for years of, teams using – a lot of different running backs. So identifying one of those guys that no one's talking about for fantasy, at least, it's not easy to do, but it can be really, really successful if you can, land on one of those guys.
Mark, final question to Howard is, can Russell Wilson rejuvenate his career with Sean Payton as his coach? Can he get back his game this year with a kind of a better offensive line, because he had a lousy offensive line last year? It seemed like they've kind of patched some holes on that line. Do you think he can rejuvenate what he had in Seattle?
I don't know if he'll ever get back to that, to that level, but I think he can still be a guy that you can win games with, provided that obviously he stays healthy. The line, like you pointed out, they had a lot of issues on it. They also had some injuries there. And their number one running back got hurt. They're hopeful that he's going to have an impact. They have some pretty good receivers. So as long as that unit – and we know, obviously, that Peyton can coach offense. So I would think that that's a team to really keep an eye on in a conference that's really good. And that's the thing about the AFC. When you start looking at all these teams and all these good quarterbacks and you say, boy, oh, boy. I mean, hey, just look at the AFC West. Now – huge questions with the Raiders because of the quarterback, situation. But obviously you have the Chiefs, you have the Chargers with Justin Herbert. So there, that's a tough division. Then you look around at the other divisions and you see, all these teams with good players leading them. So, but I don't think there's any doubt the Broncos should be better than they were last year. And in this league, I mean, what the heck? You win 5-1 year and it looks horrible. You're 5-12. But then all of a sudden you start turning around, some of those games, some of the close games you lost, you start getting some confidence. And before you know it, you're flirting with that 500 level. And, if you can get, to 9 or 10 wins, then you have a shot at the postseason. So, yeah, I think they can be improved. And I think Wilson, still has good football left in him. And a lot of things obviously have to go right. But certainly – with the experience that Peyton brings and the other coaches he's brought with him should be a big plus for Russell Wilson and that team overall.
He's on the NFL Hall of Fame selection committee. He covers the NFL and the Arizona Cardinals for PHNX Sports. co-host of a weekly Hall of Fame radio show on Sirius XM NFL Radio, and of course the associate editor for Lindy's Pro Football Preview Magazine. He's Howard Balter. Howard, thank you for the time. We kept you a little late. Always a pleasure. Stay cool. Keep hydrated there in Arizona, and we'll talk to you down the road, sir. Take care. Always.
Sounds good, guys. Take care. Always enjoy coming on with you. Have a good one.
Thank you, Howard. That's Howard Balzer. Man, he gets some hot property over there in Arizona. But, Howard, I'm working on some things. We hope to have him on our show through the course of the NFL season like we did last year. Always good to talk to Howard, and we thank him very much for his time on this Wednesday.
No, for nothing, guys. But, you know, it's he said it was a dry heat out there, which it is. You know, it's 120 in a dry heat.
Yep.
But did you know here it's the second muggiest ever?
I believe it. And I've lived in California, JC, where it's dry heat. And there were times when I would be driving down the highway and not weather with, you know, a certain tie on. It's a different type of heat, and your body acclimates to it. The humidity, which we're feeling here, thank God they don't have that in Arizona. Like, there'd be a lot of people in big trouble.
Death Valley is 132 degrees, a different hot, dry heat, hot heat, whatever. 132 is still 132. I'm like, ouch.
Pardon me, guys. Could you fry that egg in the pavement? I'd like it over easy, please. Anyway, good stuff. Always a pleasure talking to Howard. You got a couple of things here. Mark Fortney's on the line. Mark, hold on a second. Lou's been holding. I want to get Lou out of the way and get and talk to him, and we'll bring him across some baseball. So without further ado, let's go to the Jersey Shore or close by and talk to Lou from New Jersey. Louis, thanks for holding. How are you, sir?
Better than the Yankees, that's for sure. I mean, they're
yeah, no kidding.
Right now. I know it's only the second half of the season, but, you know, 1-4 is not a good start to the second half.
Let's bring in the biggest fan of the last place Yankees. Oh, wait, that'd be Lou. How are you?
I mean, we haven't seen this in 33 years.
Question, Lou. I got a serious question. Shohei Ohtani, how would he look in a Yankees uniform?
Gorgeous.
I think he would, but, you know, I think the Angels are going to put more in a fight than, you know, to send the Yankees. You know, we do need some hitters, though. And, you know, Ohtani may look like a short-term solution, but the Angels are going to do all they can to keep him, because without him, the Angels are nothing.
I'll tell you something, Lou. If there's any doubt now that the most valuable player on the Yankees is not Aaron Judge, because they are hitting .217 going into today since he's been out,
yeah.
There's no question about it. I mean, he's the franchise now. Thank God they held on to him. But you know now that you need him and you need to build around him. But it's interesting. The Yankees still get healthy, and if he comes back, which I'm not sure he will, but we know now that he is the most valuable guy in New York. Baseball.
Yes.
Anyway. All right. What's on the show this week, Lewis?
Well, let's see. We're going to talk first the Open. I was going to say British Open, but it's the Open. Sorry. We'll do some World Cup, because the Women's World Cup actually starts tomorrow, or in some cases later tonight. We'll wrap up Wimbledon, because the men's final is on Sunday, but I didn't get a chance to do that because the show is on Saturday, so we couldn't do that. We'll look at some NFL signings and who did not sign their long-term deal, which is a shame. And we'll take a look at more baseball, because as the pennant races are heating up. So if you got time, between 4 and 6 Saturday, dial 512-543-4662 on the Enhanced Sports Show.
Lewis, always a pleasure, man. I know you're on hold for a bit. Thank you so much for your time, man. Always a pleasure.
Thanks for taking the call.
All right, Lewis. That's Lou from New Jersey, resident P1. The other guy we'd like to bring in on our old school show is good old buddy Mark Fortney. And Mark's been on hold since the beginning to listen to us through Howard, and he joins the show now. Mr. Fortney, thank you so much. How are you today, sir? How is everything? Thank you for holding.
Oh, guys, that's so glad to be out of the green room and out of into the fresh, crisp air of of baseball right now. Although I was absorbing quite a bit of NFL. I actually had a few questions jogging in my mind about the Cardinals, like Joe did. I did have some Steeler questions, but right now we're on the baseball plane.
Good. That's good. Are you okay? We'll talk a little baseball. We have a lot of football to come up. I want to start.
I am a jack of all trades. I grew up on ESPN. I am a jack of all trades.
You're not gonna name, if you do have a child, you're not gonna name he or she Espen, are you? Like some people did back in the day.
I might give it a shot. You know, if I get a cat. No, that's certainly not.
Okay, good, because I was gonna have to ask you to pee in a cup immediately, and we're gonna have to drug test you, but we won't. Anyway.
Jeez.
All right, Mark. We'll go. Get your opinion. We're going to start the baseball talk. Mark, I'll throw it to you. You throw it to John or Joe. We'll go from there. But just when you to get a little bit geared up about the Boston Red Sox, okay, doing this, coming out, Cubs 2 out of 3, going into the break. They went several in a row. They come out of the break. They go to Oakland. One hit the Oakland A's on a couple nights ago, and boom, 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 smack in the face. They lose the series at Oakland. What are your thoughts? And that's a big, you know what, this time of year, right now, because they're deciding what they're going to do prior to the trade deadline, that's a big loss today to the A's. Mark, your thoughts?
Exactly my thoughts. A 3-3 start to the post-All-Star break is really not going to do anything. It's like watching Marla Hooch in League of Their Own. Should I get in the box? Should I not get in the box? Should I this? Where take 2 out of 3 against Chicago. I was excited about 11-0 on Saturday, or Sunday, I should say. And then thank God we DFA'd Jake Pereira because, well, I couldn't stomach 11-5. I said, okay, good. We can go to Oakland. We can make this thing. Maybe not. Last night was absolutely horrible, and it's just little dink and dunk things. Let's give up a walk and then a 2-run home run. I give up a walk, 2-run home run. Can't have this, particularly coming home for a homestand that starts off with the Mets, who are pretty much at a standstill themselves. Crow, I'm not quite sure as to what direction Haim is going to be going in.
Yeah, but I mean, let's be honest. We said it last week. There's not enough talent on this team. They're an average team. Like you said, they win 5, they lose 5. They win 2, they lose 2. You know, this team is not built to sustain major league talent that can compete on a championship level. Think about it. They have 3 starters. 2 out of every 5 days, they do the opener. You can't perform at that. I mean, no. Talking about, well, way too much pressure on Paxton, who missed the year, and on Ryan Baio, you know, especially when the splits between day and night are so beyond boom right in your face. The dude should never pitch when the light's out. It, you know, it's a vampire thing. You know, he gets lit up with a torch. Those 3 umpires today were just waiting to be, you know, launched out of Oakland. But this is who they are. No one should be. You know, no one should be surprised. And, Joe, I'll ask you, if Chaim Bloom was going to be a seller now, wouldn't that be more of a surprise than anything?
Yeah, it would be a surprise because, you know, I can't understand how this team doesn't win with a guy named like Kiki Hernandez at shortstop. I just can't figure out why we're not winning. Like, why? What's up? It's like I thought he was done with shortstop, and I – sit down at the restaurant, go to eat. I look up and it's like, oh wait, Hernandez that shows up. Oh yeah, I see we got an A team out in the field again. It's like they need to be buyers because I know they got a bunch of holes, but we're still as bad as we are. We're 2 games out of the wild card spot, and isn't it to make the playoffs part of the goal in baseball? So maybe Bloom should get that memo and start trying to buy, but I think they're going to do what Chips has said. They'll buy a couple of players. They'll sell a couple of players. And they'll be like, they'll just mix it up and say, oh, look, we gave the college effort. Look,
I don't know why we didn't make it. Jeez, you know, and they expect fans to buy this. And Boston fans should be thrown up in the bucket right now at the team that's out there on the field. What's your thoughts, Gibbs?
And Joe, just to follow up, just a quick point. I'm not advocating them to be buyers. What I'm saying, it'll be more of a surprise if they are buyers, because then
right.
that would mean that Bloom has an investment in this team that should not have an investment at all.
Right. Well, he does have an investment. It's called a double-A team, a triple-A team, and a single-A team. It's like, you know, he's got a 4A ball player, Bobby Dalbec, sitting there in triple-A, who at least should be given a shot to let him, not more than one at-bat, and give at least a try, and you know, but you're letting him be red-hot in triple-A, but yet you're not letting him give him a solid shot in Boston. So they just... I just say he should be given a door, but he won't be. They won't have the guts to show him the door, but he needs to go, and like yesterday was not soon enough.
It's crazy to think, and first of all, Brian Bale, I mean, granted he's pitched well, but this is a reality of where he is, because right now he's your ace. He's one of the reasons, maybe if, as far as I'm concerned, the only reason I'll turn on a Red Sox game and make an appointment television is when he's on the mound. He's young. He's learning. He's going to be great if all things go according to plan, but he's just another reason of still learning, still getting along, because he went out there and he struggled a bit in Oakland, be that as it may. That's the reality of this team. But what they're doing on the field, Justin Turner's playing every position. They had him at second base the other day. They're sitting down Jaron Duran, who should be playing every game just to showcase Adam Duvall. It's like, Jace, Mark, every day this team – just I scratch my head at what they're doing. It's like they're learning on the fly. It's like they wake up in the morning, and what are we going to do today? Forgetting about where we're going, what we've done in the past, what are we going to do today, totally deviating from any script that they have, because with each passing day, it's torn up. It drives me up a wall.
I mean, it's a crapshoot every day. I never know what lineup is going to be put into play. I'm constantly thinking, okay, I might know the rotation. It's going to be Crawford. It's going to be Bayo. And then I look and I see the next two starters undecided. What do you mean undecided? Oh, that we don't have any starters. That's right. We're going to go with bullpen guys. And then I see guys mishmashed in all different positions. Like you said, Turner at second base. Or I'll see somebody who got called up, like Alfaro playing DH, or Hamilton, the speedster at shortstop that I really enjoyed watching. I had a good time watching him for the brief moment he was up here. But there really is no telling what team is going to go out there. The forward direction is a complete question mark. You can't say they're going to be good. You can't say they're going to be bad. You can only hope to just watch and see. Maybe something can happen. There is plenty of time. I mean, should Bloom make a deal? Maybe a here and there deal. I could see something like some Moneyball type deal where he gets a guy for dirt cheap and throws a couple of prospects here and there. I'm not quite sure. But, Crow, I'm just as baffled about this team as you are, as Chips is, as Joe is, as the rest of Red Sox Nation for that matter.
Yeah, Mark, I mean, if I'm Bloom, here's what I do. I love Jansen and Turner because they've done their time. They have good contracts for next year. They can build you a clubhouse and a culture to move ahead, to be there and teach guys like Bayo the game. Guys I don't want to see here, and Joe brought it up, I don't want to see Kiki Hernandez here again. I don't want to see Adam Duvall here again. You know, have those guys move forward. I don't want to see them in August. I don't want to see them in September, because after the trade deadline, that's when you're going to see players openly say, okay, what the hell is going on? Because at least now they can play it out and say, okay, we're close enough. Maybe they'll do something. Maybe they won't. Maybe they believe in us. Maybe they won't. But, Joe, until we get an answer from Hyman, who knows? Maybe Hyman's being completely transparent behind the scenes. Doubt it. But otherwise, look for Cora and Hein Bloom to do a agree to part ways. And, you know, you go your way, stay in Boston, and, you know, I'll go win, and you go have fun with Worcester. What do you think, Joe?
Well, I think Cora is out the door at the end of the year because he just, as a manager, you can't put up with this for another year. As he can't look himself in the mirror and, like, get up every day and look and say, well, I'm putting the best team out there. We're putting the Boston Red Sox in the best position to win because Bloom is not doing that. He's doing the furthest thing from that. And it's like, you know, I get it. Duvall was signed on a one-year contract. Maybe rejuvenate his career. Maybe see what he could do. Look, with his wrist injury early in the year, then it's time. Time to move on. Time to – Kiki, look, I like him as a person, but as a player, no. He's like, he's not doing us any favors. He hasn't done anything in a year and a half, whether it's center field, shortstop, what – in the – look, he's the Mario Mendoza-like batting average that we really don't need. It's like, so we kind of – go with, look, if you're going to go with the kids, go with the kids. But, like, at least bring in guys that are clubhouse guys, a.k.a. Jansen, Turner. Bring in clubhouse guys. Change the culture in that dugout. Move forward. Help the rookies out. Help these kids out. But they're not doing it right now because, like you said, JC, they're like, oh, maybe they believe in us. Well, we're only two games out. Let's see what we can do. Maybe they – but. All that's going to happen is another couple of weeks that you're going to have the same team with a couple of guys moving out and a couple of minor players moving in, and they're going to be like, all right, we're going to go with that. And, well, we're getting Whitlock back. We're getting this guy back. We're getting – so it's like we're getting the pitching back. So, well, that's like a trade. No, it's not. It's like we need more starters. And these bullpen that Bloom started when he was back in Tampa – are driving me nuts. I hate when it's like you look at a TBA pitcher. Oh, so it's like, here we go again. It's like, let's start a pitcher that's never started in the major leagues. Well, he's going to start and totally give it up in two innings, and then we're going to be in a, we're going to be digging out of a hole come third inning, and here we go again.
It's going Old School Show live on blogtalkradio.com, Wednesday, July 19th of the year 2023. Chips Crow, Joe, and Mark Fortney here for the next 15, 20 minutes or so. Mark, I want to ask you this because I don't have the direct quote in front of me, but I'll paraphrase as best I can. Alex Cora came out a couple days ago, talked about winning games in October are what's important to them, basically, as opposed to dealing or getting prospects. Direct message to Heimblum. I'm telling you, when the book is written on these two, I don't think these two – have ever gotten along from the minute Cora came back. But he laid the gauntlet down. If that was an indicator right now that you or me at the end of the season, I don't know what is, but what does John Henry do? Because it's a pretty interesting situation. Cora is a pretty successful manager. I think he fits in here in this community. When he played here and in the clubhouse, he seems to have done the right things, and his track record here in Boston speaks volumes, in my opinion, and quite frankly, he'll get a job in a second if there's an opening. What does John Henry do if it comes down to Bloom or Cora? Because he's going to have to make a decision somewhere. If it's not both of them, it's going to be one of them.
It's really going to be the most difficult moment of John Henry's life, amidst all the championships, amidst all the glory years that he's had since purchasing the team. It's going to be the most monumental decision of his life. It's a storied franchise that you really don't want to lose that winning attitude. And that's what Cora brings to the table. It seems as though as a mediator, John Henry doesn't really care about it. He just cares about the man in the control room, Heimblum. You manage the money. You manage who comes through the door, who exits the door, who comes up, who goes down. And Cora is just the manager. He's just a figurehead. He's just a pawn. That is not something that Boston wants to see as a team, as a fan base, as a nation, if you will, Red Sox Nation. I would hate to see Cora go out the door, but I really feel like Bloom could push the buttons enough that Henry would just say, who cares? Let him walk. It's done. It's over with. And the statement that you mentioned, Chips, it's clearly the message. It's the players should be all antennas over it. Let's at least make a drive to the end of this season. I mean, Crow, I don't know about you. This team is 5 games over .500. Granted, it was a neutral walk through the first 6 games of the season after the All-Star break. But by making that statement, this team should really say, sorry, Bloom, you're in the office. We got to listen to Coach.
It'll never happen. I agree with you, Chips. Cora was never Bloom's guy. Henry had to tell Bloom, take Cora, or yep. You can't have the team. Totally agree with it. I will ask you a question, Chips. It is a question. I want to go Chips, then Mark, then Joe. If you're Artie Moreno up in California, do you go, with permission, of course, because that's how we do things here on the Old School Podcast, we get permission for Rob Manfred. We get permission. Alex Cora can manage the Angels. We re-sign Ohtani, and we help him build an organization the right way. Do you do it?
If Amadi Moreno, absolutely. They need leadership. I think that, and we're going to know a lot, and we'll talk about Ohtani in a minute, but as compelling as it is, JC, I think he's going to be staying there because I think Moreno, I don't need to control him right now. I really don't. And what better way, what cachet would Alex Cora bring to that team knowing what he's done and a way, as, and we know what Alex Cora wants. He wants players on the field. As any manager wants, you give me the players, I'll manage the team. But you've got to have one without the other. I think it's – I would – if I'm Artie Moreno, lock it in. Boom.
I think it would be a challenging move to bring Cora to an organization like the Angels. I mean, it would be the right move. He is a motivating player. However, you have to look at the other side of the fence where Joe Maddon was brought into that organization. And this is a guy who brought the Rays to a World Series, who brought the Cubs to a World Series championship, and somehow his exit was made rather quickly for whatever reason, as far as clubhouse issues are concerned. Cora is a proven manager, has won World Series himself. He could enhance the culture over there. I think this could be a good deal. It might actually work out. Joe, what say you?
Why wouldn't they take Cora? Look, Cora would do worlds for that team, would help the young players, would help all the Latinos and all the younger players. And look, L.A. is close to the Mexican. They get a lot of the Mexican players, and like the L.A. Dodgers, they get the overseas players, and they seem to do better. Look, he would be better with the younger players, give that team direction, would probably help with the pitching staff because they never seem to have enough pitching, but that'd be a no-brainer on the Angels' part, mm-hmm. A no-brainer whatsoever. I mean, and it's like, you know what, it just – John Henry doesn't seem to have a clue to know what he's got in front of his eyes, in front of his face, until he leaves. And I say Cora's all but gone. And I would do it if I was the Angels. Of course I would. It'd be crazy. You'd become a much better team, and you'd have some credibility with the manager instantly. Yep. So it'd be no-brainer.
Yeah, JC, instant credibility is for sure what they need, and I think that'd be great, and I'd certainly root for it. Let's get on to Ohtani in the last 10, 12 minutes in the show, maybe a little longer. But to me, guys, from this point on, from what we've been seeing, this may be the biggest story in sports in a long, long time with where he's going to go. trade deadline? Even if not, where does he, how does the season go? And the offseason in baseball stays at the Angels is going to be Ohtani, Ohtani, Ohtani. Because let's face it, JC, and I'll start with you. He's one of one. The only comparison to, for him is to Babe Ruth and Curt Malone, but none of us saw Babe Ruth play. So right now, Ohtani is one of one. There's no other comparison. But what did the Angels do, JC? Do they trade him off for prospects? Do teams bring him in knowing that they can have him for the stretch time and lose him? I mean, is Ohtani worth a gamble just for the stretch time if he's not with the team next year? But JC, this Ohtani situation is incredible. And what's your forecast, at least for the rest of the season, and where he might be, or he end up? And quite frankly, JC, where do you would want to see him play?
Man, Tips, you talk about a no-win situation. You're damned if you do. You're damned if you don't. You don't want to be the guy who said, you know, he said, I walked, let Babe Ruth walk away. You know, I traded him, you know, the Heim Bloom of the Angels. You let him walk away. You didn't get equal value, which you're never going to get equal value. Once you give away the star player, that's always the best part of the deal with the star player going there. But if you're the Angels, when have you ever gotten anything right?
No.
So you're almost destined to try to get something done, don't you? So it's, but what concerns me is about Major League Baseball is it's not a system, it's not a league where you have, you know, more than a handful of teams in play. What are we talking here? The Yankees, the Dodgers, the Mariners, the Giants, you know? It's, you know, back in the day, Peter Angelos made a bid in Baltimore, you know, with all his money. Back in the day, the Red Sox would have made a bid for him. There's no way they're going to make that. I find it hilarious when, you know, you hear Red Sox fans say, yeah, let's make a call on Ohtani. He'll come here. You're never going to pay him. I mean, come on. We're all paying shortstops, you know, $6 million. I think at the end of the day, they make the deal. And they don't get value for him. And I think he ends up going to San Francisco. How about you, Mark?
Yeah. I've been hearing a lot about him, Coast. I've been hearing Seattle, San Francisco. My father is the king of saying the most ridiculous things, and when Ohtani comes up in discussion, he says the Yankees, and I keep telling him he's ridiculous. Yet this is the same guy who, when I told him Jacoby Ellsbury going to the Yankees was ridiculous, he proved me wrong. I can see the Pinstripers waving a crazy amount of money to try and get that deal done, just to try and save face, given the fact that Aaron Judge is now off the scene. But I know Ohtani's his favorite is the West Coast. I could see the Giants. It's an organization that needs a little bit of help, especially after winning two World Series in the last decade. And I'm sure the franchise would like to get back there. But anything is possible. That man with the green five on his chest said it, and it definitely rings true in this case. Joe, how about you?
I see the dark horse in this is the Seattle Mariners, because if you want to stay on the West Coast, Seattle's got some players and got some kids that they could, like, throw at the Angels. And I think the owner would cough up enough cash to keep them because, I mean, you know, they do have that. They've had star players there from that area of the world, and it's like, and why wouldn't they? But I see him staying on the West Coast. I don't see him being a pinstripe because Ohtani, I think through his agent, will say, no, I want the West Coast. I don't care what you give me. If a guy's comfortable and wants to play on the West Coast, I don't think he'd be the same. As great of a player as I don't think he'd bode well in New York. I think it would I just don't think he'd be comfortable enough. So I say he stays on the West Coast. And, hey, look, San Fran would be a great landing spot, would help that franchise out, and that would be great. I think it would be good for baseball, not great, but good. But let's see what happens, because it's going to be an interesting 2 to 3 weeks to see what's going on and see what the Angels really want to do.
ESPN, I'm looking on ESPN.com now in the Major League Baseball. They have teams that could for Ohtani, and they have Giants as well. This would be different, according to ESPN, if it were to happen. Their opinion. Left-handed pitcher, shortstop Marco Luciano. Left-handed pitcher slash DH, Red Cross, and outfielder Mike Yastrzemski go with the Angels for Joey Ohtani. But you made a good point, JC, and this is why I like the Giants as well. Because they're still getting beat because they failed to land Aaron Judge. They're going to put all their eggs in a basket, and I think they're going to go after Ohtani. I think he's fit in perfect there. The ballpark, the community, the Bay Area, because there's no more Oakland A's after next year, so it's all Giants. That would be the whole Northern California. Part of that would be Ohtani, and what a great marketing strategy that would be. But I don't want to see him go to the Dodgers, JC, and I don't think the Yankees, they need more than this guy. But Steve Cohen, the Mets, scares me, JC, because that guy wants to spend, and he wants to win.
Yeah, and, the best thing about, against the Mets is, it hasn't worked out this time, so what's going to happen at this trade deadline? Will he be a seller? Will he get rid of Verlander? Will he get rid of a Scherzer to free up some money for an Ohtani for the future? It's going to be very interesting. And do owners wait? Do other deals get put on the sideline until Ohtani gets done? And we get like a flurry of deals in those last 6 minutes. And, I'm with you, Chips. I don't want the Dodgers for that very same reason I don't want the Yankees either. It's because it's the same thing.
Yep.
And we've been down this road before. And, I was talking to my wife the other day. It's you watch Major League Baseball and, you wonder about the TV ratings and why they don't grow the game. It's because every weekend it's the same thing. The same game that's on the Major League Baseball Network on Friday is the Fox game on Saturday, is the Sunday night baseball game on Sunday. The same thing each and every week, and it's either the Houston Astros, the New York Yankees, the LA Dodgers, or the Angels with Ohtani. Of those, at least Ohtani, I'll put my clicker down because he's such a remarkable generational talent.
Yep.
But those other teams, it's the same thing over and over and over again. But, like, this weekend, again, they actually added the Mets and the Red Sox schedule for Sunday Night Baseball this week. Who the hell in Des Moines, Iowa wants to see the Mets and the Red Sox Sunday night at 7:05. Please tell me, Mark, who wants to see undecided picks for the Red Sox?
I have to say, Crow, I firmly believe Vegas or somebody somewhere in the ionosphere or somewhere on another planet, somebody's in control of all this because they must know something. They must feel like Red Sox met some crazy harebrained thing. Like the malice at the palace could happen in the middle of this game and actually draw attention and light a fire under the Red Sox asses for the rest of the season. I mean, look at the scoreboard that we had last night. How many 11-10 games did we have? How many 16-13 games did 13 runs, 15 runs? Somebody knows something. I mean, I can't imagine anybody would want to watch a no-name Red Sox team. Not really no-name, but a WTF lineup that keeps going in every game, and the Mets with a pitching rotation of one guy who's an absolute loon with two different color eyes who makes 400 X amount of millions of dollars. And then you've got another guy who doesn't care about baseball in October and wants to just go off into the offseason because he's already got the hot wife and the World Series ring. But I guess it makes – that's why it's called the Entertainment Sports Programming Network, right? Joe, we got to have entertainment. Without entertainment, how would baseball flourish?
Come on. What do you get against the Mets who pay $49.6 million to players that on a year – please, on a team this year. What do you got against that team? I mean, you know, well, maybe Doc Gooden and Darryl Strawberry are coming back through the gates pretty soon, and maybe Bill Buck will be at first base for the Red Sox, and Bob Stanley will be pitching, and, you know, you can bring back the 86 World Series. You know, it's like, so somebody out there knows something or is going to bet on a game, and maybe Pete Rose is going to bet on that game, and he wants to see Sunday Night Baseball. He can't be in the Hall of Fame, so they want to watch that game because they're sick and tired of watching good baseball, so they might as well watch the minor league Red Sox, the 4A Red Sox, played into the New York Mets. It makes no sense. It's like, so I'm with you, JC. You're sick and tired of seeing the same teams. Parody used to be one thing, but it doesn't parody anymore. It seems like they all go to the Dodgers. And it's like, you know, and you can't buy a team because it seems like the Mets and the Padres can't buy the right players and get the right players to mix. Talent doesn't always win it. So, I don't know. Baseball's got a lot to change, and they wonder why they're losing out to all these other sports, and kids don't want to go and play baseball anymore. So,
well, you know, guys,
what does.
It's Boston and New York, so they are trying to parlay that. That's what ESPN does. It's the Yankees, but it's the guys in Flushing. But here's one thing. I don't mind the Mets because, granted, they're not playing well, but there's star power on that team. There are players that I will tune into. Pete Alonso, Lindor, Scherzer. I mean, those guys will keep me tuned to a television when they're on. The Padres are saying. With this Red Sox team, and I've been seeing it all year long, JC, there's no star power. There's no star power. Rafael Devers, yes, but he hasn't gravitated to that status yet. But there's nobody. There's no appointment watching for this team, the Red Sox. At least teams like San Diego, not doing well, star power. Teams like the Mets, not doing well, star power. The Cardinals, I'll tune into because of Arenado and Goldschmidt, star power, even though they're in last place. I'll tune in to watch those teams because anything can happen. But with the Red Sox team, oh man, it's been since pre-John Henry days. Remember that worst season, JC, the first days of the score, at least for me? That Jimmy Williams season, that bad, bad year under Duquette. That was the most unwatchable team in the past 20-some-odd years for the Red Sox, for me to tune into. This is nothing from it.
Yeah. Frog doesn't bump his booty, and don't you disrespect you chain there, Chips.
Joe Kerrigan. All right, guys. Okay. A little final thought. I'm losing my voice, and I just want to thank you guys for coming in. I don't have any thoughts, but I'll give you guys a show. JC, go, and Mark, give you final thoughts if you want to.
Final thoughts, I will say that the Patriots training camp is begun. Rookies in town, coaches in town. And yes, let the battling of Bill Belichick officially kick off, the countdown to his demise and kickoff of departure from Foxborough begin from Michael Felger and Tony Mezzera.
Go ahead, Mark.
My take for the end of the night is going to be next season when the Boston Celtics come into play. Somebody by the name of Jordan Walsh will be turning the culture around. I've been watching this guy throughout the summer league. I've been watching him since he's been drafted. And this man is beyond possessed. He looks like he's hungry. He looks like he wants to win. And you could talk about Chet Holmgren. You could talk about the Thompson twins. I think this kid is going to make an absolute huge splash in the NBA next year.
My final thoughts are, Hard Knocks starts, and it'll be the New York Jets and Hard Knocks, but it'll be season of Belichick on his way out and the Jets absolutely positively flopping their way to third or fourth place. So we'll have the battle of the basement between the Jets and the Patriots come mid-season.
And my final thought is, and I don't know why, maybe it's because here in New England, but nationally, why is everyone just whistling past the Buffalo Bills like their time is done? Because, I mean, if you think back to last year, all the adversity, the DeMar Hamlin situation, the shooting at a store in Buffalo, these couple of snowstorms that these players could not get out of. And, oh, by the way, they lost both their cornerbacks and their safety. But everyone is sleeping on this Buffalo Bill team. Be careful what you wish for, guys. This Buffalo Bill team is lying in waiting, and I think they're going to be as strong as ever. But, man, don't sleep on this Buffalo Bill team because they are still in elite status, in my opinion. But that's going to all play out in the next few weeks and as the season progresses. But, Jim, I really appreciate your time. John, Joe, Mark, always a pleasure. Mark, thanks for hanging in there too, Howard. Appreciate your time. And John and Joe, always a pleasure, man. Good to talk to you guys every Wednesday. And once again, this week, thank you for the therapy session.
Good time. Enjoy the evening.
Have a good night, guys.
All right.
Guys, great night.
All right, guys. For Mark, John, Joe, this is Chips. And for y'all, special thanks to Howard Balzer. Join us to talk a little NFL, Arizona Cardinals, and all the little football tidbits heading into camp. But on behalf of the guys, you guys out there have a great day, great evening. Stay safe, be well, and we'll talk really, really soon. Take care.
Go ahead.